to the theater marquee from right. Stewart's shop.
Okay.
Just right where
right across the street
now.
From the theater marquee, right?
Yeah.
And,
there was a small crowd,
right.
And people were watching him, and he's trying to accuse these young people of this and that. And Chris stands up to him and says, "I don't steal." And he tries to say that in three or four different ways. And the guy starts shoving him, grinning and smirking like he's totally out of his gourd, like the Joker in a Batman movie.
Right. Well, that sounds like Stuart Martin, all right. I mean, there's no question.
I can believe it. As soon as he saw the girl was crying, he turns around and walks away smug with his hands in his pocket. So I walked immediately down to the host. There's two policemen outside the host, and I say, "Who do I talk to get a merchant some psychiatric help?"
Mm-hmm.
And the police say, "Go in and talk to the hosts." And so I have to wait after the purse thieves and the girlfriends are done with the two hosts to get to talk to a host, and they send me back out to talk to the police.
Of course.
And of course the police don't do anything either.
Okay, now you can file.
I'll tell you more about that.
The complaint about us for assault, because it sounds like Chris, you were assaulted. That's what it sounds like.
Well, I'm just speaking as a witness. I'm not going to let that go down in my town. And have the police help cover it up. They didn't even ask me my name, or what do I care?
Well, I've spoken to you before, Chris. You've got a sign, houseless, hungry artist, spare anything at all, please help, thanks. And we talked before, and we did a little interview once, a month and a half ago. You were down the way. How are you feeling? Cypher, you feeling fucked with it?
Cold. I don't know, just cold. Want to get some change? Can we get something to eat?
The police did not take a report from Sam effectively, and she wasn't able to file a report about Stuart Martin.
Hello.
How did you find out his name?
He eventually gave it up when he was by the cops.
You know, a year ago, we had a table set down in front of the ID building. We were protesting the ID building's harassment of homeless people. And we might consider doing the same thing again.
Yes, I'm thinking about picketing in front of the store.
Let us know if you're interested. If you are, I'll give you my number. Give me a call and come down and help you if I'm around.
Sounds good.
I apologize for recording this. You know, you asked me not to. Is it okay if I report this?
Yeah, it's okay. I want to get back to running my song.
I'm sorry. I'll let you go.
What
are you saying?
The corner is
out
loud, illegally.
What are you saying?
I said this young man is the one legal person on the sidewalk that's been here a while.
Uh-huh.
No. With his sign.
Where is the juggler is it?
Well, at the same time the juggler is passing his bowler hat around with a very good spiel, out loud, and raking it in my view. You know, he ought to cut some of the people that are willing to put up with the laws in on his take.
Coffee money?
I don't know. Thank you.
Who are the cops gonna believe? Me? Or you guys over me? He's all, if you take me to court, who do you think they're gonna believe? You guys telling the truth or me? So, and then he walked away.
Huh?
I don't have money to buy cigarettes. I'll take the ones I can get for free.
If you're interested in doing a picketing thing, that might be I would support you on that. Maybe you've done it before.
I think the court's a good idea if they can get an attorney to help them.
And if they're good witnesses or notified citizens or have names.
Or the attorney.
We're on Poppy Rose, we've got meetings.
So that was an incident on December 22nd, 1995, where two people, Chris and Sam, Chris was apparently assaulted by Stuart Martin by his report, maligned, evicted from his store, and slandered, accused of theft. And Linda LeMaster witnessed some of this, including the assault, and then attempted to file, she and I both tried to file a police report about this later, and that's another story in itself, and we actually recorded much of the attempt to get two police officers to do that. But right now, we have another possibility. I think Becky, co-host Becky Johnson here, is going to attempt to reach Stuart Martin by phone to give Stuart a chance to tell his side of the story. What do you say, Becky?
Yes, I'm concerned that we're not balanced enough here. And
we're going to balance comment, as they say in KSCO.
Okay.
So here she is. She's dialing that number now. trying to reach Stuart Martin on New Year's Day, which may be difficult, although who knows? They say those merchants are operating all the time.
We just try.
You could get through there.
We try and do what we can.
Tell me it's on the air.
Can you turn the mic thing down?
And that phone is ringing. We were lucky we got Mayor Rutkin last week, but will we be able to get...
I'm not even sure that they're open on New
Year's Day. Yeah, I think they're probably closed. What a pity. Well, maybe on Friday we can call this man.
They're very busy.
They're probably pretty busy.
Post-Christmas sales.
All those non-homeless people, of course.
The homely
people, yeah. The homish people.
Yeah. Non-thieves.
Non-thieves. Yeah, all those people that aren't thieves who are richer so they can afford to be...
Ethical.
Ethical, yes. They can afford to be ethical. Ethics really is a rich person's delight, you know.
Maybe we tip them a little too much, Robert.
Hey, Kirby Stewart's listening to the radio.
Don't answer the phone,
right? Well, it sounds to me like we're out of luck here. Let's try again next week, perhaps?
Okay, Stuart Martin, if you or some of your friends are out listening, we would very much welcome to hear your side of the story.
Yeah, we want to hear all sides of the story. Stuart is, of course, invited to come on the air anytime he wants. Though sitting in the same room with him might be a trial, but I think I could probably deal with it. If I had a strong, perhaps a clothespin or some other kind of anesthetic mask.
Maybe one of those Newt Gingrich barf bags.
A barf bag would also be useful.
Of course, you'd have to go into Bookshop Santa Cruz to get it, which might be a problem.
Well, I think we're going to have to move on here, Becky. The phone ring has a certain kind of lulling quality, but we're trying to wake people up and not put them to sleep.
We tried.
That's our attempt to get Stuart Martin on the line here on our New Year's Day show. I guess we can continue, although I invite...
Can I address an issue that was covered a little earlier, and that is about passing out flyers or having tabling or perhaps distributing petitions, gathering signatures. I'm confused. I thought that there were constitutional protections on freedom of speech and... That would preclude any city ordinance saying that you can't do this in front of our outdoor coffee spot.
Right. Well, you would think so, and there is in fact a little known part of the United States Constitution called the First Amendment. People, of course, pay little attention to these archaic laws, particularly when they impact business adversely here in Santa Cruz. But no, Neil Coonerty made it a point after I and John Hamilton and Linda Edwards had tabled in front of his store for 3 months seeking an end to the sleeping ban, because Neil Coonerty was the mayor in 1993 and notoriously resistant to any kind of modification of that truly criminal law. He had passed through the city council, through deals with Kennedy and Byers and that whole gang of wonderful liberals or progressives you love so much, that one of the provisions of that code, you can actually read the code section if you want to check it out later, it's Municipal Code 5.43.020 Section E. And that section states that, you know, you are not allowed to sit down anywhere on the sidewalk or on any object on the sidewalk between the sidewalk, between a open air cafe and the curb. So you can't have a table in that area. Such is my understanding. I know you can't sit, for instance, on the obelisk.
You mean a table other than the tables they have out there?
Well, you know, you're right. You can sit at the tables they have out there, provided, of course, you're a paying customer with the permission of the store. But, for example, if you attempt to sit on the square, I guess it's a water pipe box in front of the Bookshop Santa Cruz, and they have another one up in Cathcart and Pacific. It's a flat, square surface. That is illegal to do that. And I believe it is also illegal to sit at a table that you set up of your own devising in front of an open-air cafe, of which there are now a number along Pacific Avenue. And the point of that was to make sure that messages that were hostile to the businesses were not essentially given permission to be there. Now, I don't know that any case has been taken to court around this law, because it is of questionable constitutionality. No question about that.
It certainly raises some question in my mind about how that could possibly be legal. And I've done some petition signature gathering, and I was kicked out of Costco.
Oh, really?
I was not in Costco. I was out in front of Costco gathering signatures, and they came out and kicked me out.
Kicked your butt down the road, eh?
Yes, and I wondered if they really had a legal right to do that.
Well, it's interesting. I think that there is an argument to be made that they can't, and if you get an attorney who's willing to pursue it, you can do it and sue them for false arrest, because there has to be, if the place is normally open to the public, then I think that they cannot exclude you unless you are engaging in behavior that is somehow significantly disruptive. But I'm making this up as I go based upon what happened to me at the Free Meal in 1990. In 1990, a coalition under Karen Gillette and a kind of a de facto coalition, and Sherry Connable, who actually I'm now, both of them, I'm on better terms with each, decided that they wanted to have me excluded from their spaces. And their spaces were included any meeting of the Coalition for a Safe Place to Sleep, which met initially at the Resource Center for Nonviolence and then at Sherry Connable's house when I kept attending the meetings. Attending the meetings, by the way, and saying very little. You've heard me at my most dynamic when you heard the tape at the beginning of the hour of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless meeting, which I'm going to play again at the end of the hour, by the way, so you can, you know, get an exciting second look at that tape or second listen. But I was also...
And young children, cover your ears.
Cover your ears when that happens. But the other space I was excluded from, or they attempted to exclude me from unsuccessfully, was the Free Meal. And the reality there was I was holding kind of quiet, off-to-the-side meetings of a group called JUST, J-U-S-T, which is an acronym for Join Us, Sleep Tonight, meaning we were fighting the sleeping ban, we were fighting for a legal place to sleep. We were actually kind of a left-wing pressure group to kind of give Sherry Connable's group an opportunity to succeed. We figured that they would negotiate with Sherry Connable's group because our group was more radical. Well, Karen Gillette's thugs, or workers, as they called them in those days,
thugs.
Shermick says apparently they're still thugs, came out and, you know, began throwing food at us and screaming at us and telling us to leave and so forth. And we were trying to close down her meal and any number of other wholly fabricated and irrelevant and untrue charges. And Gillette then decided that she tried a little power play. She, at that time, she had a vote, say, how many people want politics at the meal? There was about, most people had left anyway, but she got a majority to say they didn't want politics. Then she said, how many people want Robert Norris evicted from here? And she couldn't get a majority for that. But the story later appeared in the Sentinel that I was evicted from the Free Meal. Not true. I've never been evicted from the Free Meal. She's tried, and Brian Koepke at one time has called the police on me as her second in command, but this is all ancient history. It hasn't happened recently, and I want to say that Karen Gillette this year has been quite improved in her behavior regarding people's political rights around protest. That has to be said, and it should be said again.
Yeah, I think we're getting back down to why I had to stop over 30-something fights over there at Karen's place, and it seems to me that I'm useless, never did anything, but she never knew what I was doing. She had no idea. Did she ever come to me and talk to me? No. And in fact, it seems to me, I guess she thinks that I'm a liar because there was a wrench found in her living room there in the house. And I said, oh, that's mine. She says, well, I'm not going to give it to you just because you say that. Well, being a priest and a natural doctor, I figure anybody would accept my word. Well, she didn't, and I had to wait another whole day to get my wrench back. But that's not really the problem. I think the thugs, I think Karen's people shouldn't be there. I think there should be other types of people there, and I think she's still letting a lot of the riffraff run around, especially when I tried to get Gizmo out of there. And seemed like he ripped off my locker and about 15 others. Now he's finally out of there, but he's been kicked out of there 7 or 8 times over the years and is still there. They know he's a junkie. They know he's a thief. They know his mouth just garbles garbage coming out of the worst trash words I've ever heard. And I'll tell you what, he is one of the people I'm looking for.
And Gizmo, if you're listening, call in.
Yes, feel free, Gizmo, to come and give your point of view on this. Again, the issue seems to be... Coral, do you want to say something?
Just that it's easy to judge and
it's not as easy to get involved, and I mean, there's so many different ways you can do it, so I'm encouraging everybody, whatever their talents are, to do it, because I'm going to have to say goodbye to the panel.
Hey, Coral, thank you for coming
thank
today.
Thank you, Coral.
Everyone out there, and wave goodbye to Carol from your, Coral, from your, and try to get her name straight, will you? For CB, as we call her. Thank you, CB. Come again.
All right.
The point that, actually, the reason I raised the issue of, well, it wasn't really Karen Gillette I was raising the issue of. I was raising the issue of access to public spaces. And the question of access to areas, let's say, is the Coonerty Cafe law constitutional? Well, in Berkeley, Proposition O has been declared unconstitutional by a federal judge. And that's a whole kind of big package of anti-homeless laws, rather milder, in my view, than the Santa Cruz laws. They were somewhat copied from the Santa Cruz laws, or say rather, all of these anti-homeless laws seem to be coming out of the same place, a kind of a think tank mentality. Also presents ideas of the hosts. They're all going to have a little characters in Mickey Mouse type uniforms with, you know, hosts on the back with big grins, kind of friendly fascism running around the mall, supposedly helping the tourists, but actually simply eliminating those people from the mall that are considered to detract from business, and at the same time using a new set of anti-homeless laws to do it. Sit on the sidewalk, go to jail. Ask for dime after dark, go to jail. Set up a table after dark, go to jail. Laws that are designed to make the mall kind of a Disneyland Mirth.
What kind of an interesting situation we have here in Santa Cruz, where it's illegal to sit, it's illegal to speak, it's illegal to read, and it's illegal to sleep.
Well, you've got to have money to do these things. As any decent citizen knows, the poor tend to simply degrade the property values in an area and make living more of a trial for those who are the truly deserving rich, or weller-to-do, let's say. You are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3. The opinions expressed here are those of the opinion expressors, as you might imagine. And this is Bathrobes Pierre's Broadside, Civil Rights with Your Coffee, 10 to 12, Monday and Friday on 96.3 FM here in beautiful Santa Cruz. It's New Year's Day. Our phone line is open. You're invited to call 427-3772. We're now going to show you what happened when Linda LeMaster and I tried to file a complaint on behalf of these people who were harassed by Stuart Martin. But hey, looks like maybe, could it be Stuart Martin calling in on the phone?
Oh, Stuart, I hope it's you.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz. You're on the air.
Yeah, how you doing, Robert?
Hi, Al. What's up?
A lot. I'm listening. I've been listening.
Alrighty. So what conclusions
have
you got?
Very interesting. There aren't really any conclusions, but Shroom, he's a good guy.
Well, he's smiling, and I think he appreciates you saying that.
Anyway, I have a problem.
What's that?
Well, the problem is that I don't look homeless, and I don't know what to do about it.
Well,
I have to find out a way that I can prove that I'm...
You know, I think we can really help you with that problem, Al, because you need it to be probably the first customer at our new homeless boutique. This could be what we're going to be setting up downtown in order to help the ordinary middle-class person understand what it is like to be homeless.
Yeah.
What is it like to be beaten up by, shoved around by Stuart Martin? How does it feel to be kicked out of the Java House by Kevin with a friendly smile?
Yuppies need to come in.
You need to get the real taste of these experiences.
No, how does it feel to be kicked out by, who's the other guy in the Java House?
Stuart.
Be kicked out by Stuart, but go in at night and be friends with Kevin.
Oh.
And when Kevin finds out that Stuart said, hey, I found out that guy's been going here, been coming in here for the last 6 months, and he's been thrown out years ago.
Are you speaking of someone we know, Al?
Huh?
Could this be a person that you know well?
It's possibly me.
Oh.
But I go in there anyway. I don't give a shit.
I see.
I go in. See, the thing is, I think it's the consciousness or the mentality or whatever's behind whatever you do. The wages are so low in Santa Cruz that I found out that the places that I've been thrown at, if the people don't work there anymore, or don't work there anymore anyway, or three-quarters of the people, there's always new faces, and until they catch on, you know, you can hang out. I mean, if you need to hang out, and I need to hang out.
You do.
That's my, yeah.
You are one of the more notorious hanger-outers here. There's no question about it.
And he doesn't panhandle.
And you,
now, is that illegal yet?
Now, Schwimmick accuses you of not panhandling.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, does he have any change on him?
There you, there you are. The man who even gives the finger to Ms. Schwimmick. This is a... It's commendable.
Well,
the thing is,
I don't call it panhandling. I ask my friends for money right up front. You got $2? Well, give me $2. I don't even say you got. Give me $2. And they say, Al, come on. You know, why don't you get a job? I say, why should I get a fucking job? I just want your money. If you got extra money, give it to me. I'll make good use of it.
Hey, Al. You know, I want to thank you for helping out the homeless people when they are hungry. And I've noticed you've gotten food for people on and off from a few of those restaurants, and you really do a good service. God bless you, brother.
Oh, thanks.
And with those words, Al, should we perhaps dump you by the side of the roadside and move on to the next topic here on the show?
Well,
you're not so blatant.
Well, I mean, words.
You know, one thing I'll say about you, your true feelings are so nicely expressed. Hey, come on, I got somebody trying to... Come in the room here.
Are the women attacking you, Al? What's going on?
Yeah, do you believe this?
Well, I think we should leave you to your more to your pursuits there.
Okay, take it easy.
Hey, take care, Al.
Bye.
And that was the notorious Al, who is the humanitarian, according to Ms. Schwimmick. To others, a major nuisance factor, and of course well known at Free Radio Santa Cruz as Dead Air Al. But he seems to be improving markedly, and I commend Al's new serious perspective on the issues that we've been discussing.
And his medications are kicking in.
Cheap shots from Becky Johnson, notwithstanding.
Yeah, let's see what happens when I associate with you, Robert.
So what we have now is we have guests in the studio still who seem to be willing to engage in the long sit here. I don't know if we are...
I really only have one more comment I want to make before I mosey on.
Uh-oh, Becky's threatening to leave. And if she leaves, I leave because she's my ride, folks.
Ooh, oh, no.
Possibly we'll leave together. What happens after that is anybody's guess.
Well, yeah, this really doesn't have anything to do with the issues we've been discussing. It's more just sort of comments about first night last night.
Oh, yes. Tell us about first night last night.
First
night, by the way, for those who are out of town and are hearing this tape in San Francisco, we do broadcast up in San Francisco at times, you know. First night is the ceremony by which all the people walk around with little $8 buttons on playing games in the streets for one night. And it's a sort of an open scene. The cars are blocked off. A lot of folks are on the sidewalk and in the streets. And it's actually kind of nice. It'd be nice if that were happening every night.
We actually engaged in some of that illegal sitting on the sidewalk last night, but we got away with it. My children and I went down to the town clock for the big midnight extravaganza at the town clock. Brought to us, one of the main people who brought it was Bob LaMonica, who I had worked with on the DA recall. And he promised all sorts of special effects with this clock.
Come on, caller, we know you're calling in, don't give up.
And I had heard a rumor that at the stroke of midnight, Bob was going to catapult down from the top of the tower on ropes dressed like a New Year's baby. And, that didn't happen, so I was a little disappointed at that.
Nor did the police riot again, as they did in 1984, which was a real pity.
And then I asked him, I said, well, what is exactly going to happen at the stroke of midnight, you know, this big thing? Are we going to have, is it going to just explode with a banner saying, fuck you, Art Danner? And he promised that would happen, and it didn't. So I was kind of disappointed.
So there we have it. Failed again, battling Bob LaMonica. Buff, in many respects, blew it this time.
You're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Take me up there real quick, would you?
Sure, hang on.
Okay.
One of these private callers.
It's me.
Yeah, so...
Hey, Matt.
I did enjoy the special effects at the town clock, although I really would have liked to have seen Bob catapulting down and to have brought that to the attention of the citizens. It would have been a sight to behold. Maybe next year.
Well, that was Mary Matt calling in on the phone, and he's a little delayed for his show, but all you folks who are waiting breathlessly for his noon show, be advised, that will be happening in about 20 minutes. And until then, we have an opportunity to babble on a bit more. I think we'll babble on first with what happens when you try to file a police complaint about Stuart Martin in a secondhand kind of way, and you get to see Linda LeMaster and I talking to two officers 3 days before Christmas. Here we go. See how you find this.
Hey, guys. 820. What are the badge numbers again?
One's 146.
And?
I couldn't find out.
There were two officers who were sent to a complaint at the ID Martin of the ID building. I'm recording this stuff.
And you guys said that you would talk to him, so I just wondered how it went.
Filed against Martin, because that's what she was trying to do.
I don't believe so. You'd have to talk to the officer. Who was that officer? I don't know. And how can we find that out?
I have to call Santa Cruz PD.
Okay. Is there any way you can find out directly just by calling in and asking?
Channel's on primary channel, so you'll have to call down there.
So you say you're pretty sure an officer was sent to deal with this situation.
It was all resolved and taken care of.
Because the fellow was pretty upset that I spoke to. Apparently, so was the woman.
Actually, you know what? The fact that the case deals with somebody else and there was an officer involved, I mean, we're not even entitled to talk to you about it.
Really? Because I understand Linda made the...
If you needed to find out information regarding that, you would have to contact Sergeant McMahon, who's out tonight.
Sergeant McMahon.
Right.
Because the reason I approached you is because Linda said she attempted to file a complaint with you unsuccessfully. That's what I heard from her.
She hasn't talked to me at all.
Oh, Linda, did you want to file a complaint with this man about what happened? Because he says you haven't spoken to him.
Are you a victim now?
I saw this man assaulting a young kid.
I totally understand, but for what do you... Okay, let me explain something to you. What do you want out of this case?
147 speaking.
Well, the same thing I said before when I talked to you.
That's why I said that was...
I think this man is going to go berserk and be more violent if he keeps getting more wound up. And I thought...
Like I've already said, there was an officer dispatched and it's been resolved. If you need more information, you're more than welcome to call Sergeant McMahon. And she could, tell you what happened. But unless there's a victim, okay, there's not much we can do, okay? Are you a victim of this crime?
I don't know. I mean, if this happened every day I came downtown, I would feel that I'm being victimized. I'm being deprived of my city.
Okay, well then maybe you need to contact the city council and tell them what's going on one of these businesses. Okay, because for
there's no way through the police to at least get you to register what I'm saying. I'll have to talk to the city.
I totally understand, ma'am. But you gotta understand, for us to do something, we need a victim.
Right.
There is no victim. Okay? We already spoke.
I know.
There was an officer sent down there. He already resolved the situation. There's not much...
Well, there actually were two victims that I spoke to and interviewed. And I guess you didn't interview those two individuals, right?
No one came to us. Let me put it to you this way. We don't know what happened over there.
Right.
Okay, you need to talk to that officer. Okay.
But what I want you to understand is that I'm not trying to find fault with what your legal responsibility is. I'm just really concerned about that man's mental health and the fact that he could hurt somebody.
She just wants you to hear that's all. And you did.
We did.
There was an officer. There was
to be a record in the police department that I was a witness to what that assault.
Right.
I think it's sloppy not to have that noted.
She has the right to file a police report about an assault, does she not?
I will. I just have to write a letter or something.
No, you can do it by calling an officer and making a report, and you can that's
well,
presumably
that
the right
what
to
I'm walking up
let me explain something. Do you know this the victim's name?
I just met the victim after I saw the assault, but I have encountered the assaulting person before.
Okay, so what did you say?
Not like that either.
What did you say?
To the kid? To the boy that was being pushed?
You can approach a little closer. We're going to block that. The downtown ordinances, you know.
What did you say, Mel?
I tried to tell him, and then I realized the woman he was with was in tears, so I stopped talking. I tried to say, try not to take that personal. This man mistreats a lot of people, especially homeless people.
What did you see?
Fallen hit a man before.
What did you see, Linda, is what he's asking.
I thought he said, what did I say?
Well, what did you see?
And what I saw was Stuart Martin pushing this guy down the sidewalk like this, in the chest, and then the kid trying to stand up to him and say, I'm not a thief, I don't steal. Apparently he told the kid, you must be a thief, you're homeless, or something like that. I didn't hear what Martin said. Five store shots down from his. And after he shoved this kid to the point where the kid started to lose his balance, he turns around, puts his hands in his pockets, and grins. I mean, like he's some vampire or something. He really wanted to get off on someone else's distress. And I'm afraid, because of other people I've known in my life, that if he gets any more wound up...
Ma'am, I totally understand you, but for what you need, ma'am, for what we need is just right now. What happened in the past is what happened in the past, okay? If you want a report taken, I'll be more than happy to do a report. Like I say, there's no... This would just be an incident because there's no victim, okay? There's nobody's name. The only name that's going to go down is your name, okay?
I recognize the man that was assaulting.
Well, I don't know the circumstances. I'm going to put on a report. You saw one person shoving the other person, and this is what he said, end of report. That's basically what I'm going to put, because that's all,
you might also mention that you knew one of the parties, and his name was Stuart Martin of the ID book.
Well, I have mentioned it sometimes.
Yeah, well, presumably it'll be in the report, right?
He's writing the police report.
This sounds more like a civil problem, okay? You know, this is not a criminal problem because there's no victim, okay? But if it's going to make you happy to take a report, hey, I'm here to serve the public. I'll take your report.
And I think you're right that this is a civil problem.
If I bring you the victim, would you make a criminal report? I can bring you the victim if you'd like.
See, we don't know what happened.
If I bring you the victim and they want to make a complaint, I take it. She'll accept that, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
But you also need to talk to the officer that responded, because if he resolved it,
I'll ask him that happened. I'll be right back.
Yeah, I'm going to take a report, so you're going to have to hurry up.
Sure.
They may not be here by the time we get back.
An officer was called to that location for the incident in hand. He talked to the parties involved, and that incident was resolved. No matter how it was resolved, I don't know, okay? She's not a victim in this case. She is not a victim.
She's a complainant.
She is not a victim. She keeps saying she's a victim. She is not a victim. She is a witness. Now, what she ought to do is contact Santa Cruz Police Department, find out the officer who responded there, and if she wants to add her statement to his report, his or her report, then that's what she should do.
So this officer right here is offering to take a report, and you're stopping this?
No, I'm not stopping. If he wants to do that,
right,
then that's fine. But we don't know what happened. He doesn't know if there's a report made or not.
I feel like, because I'm here in the flesh, instead of calling you up on the phone, I'm getting half of a response. That's how it feels.
Ma'am? This officer is absolutely correct on the statement that if the report was taken over there, add your supplemental to them, because like I say, I don't know what's happened. I'll take your report, but that's all I'm going to say. You saw this, you saw that, end of report.
Give him your report. Linda, give him your report.
You can record it.
No, I'm going to go get the victim.
Here.
Get the report.
Now do me a favor, turn it off.
Now, what happened after this, and you're listening to an incident on the sidewalk December 22nd involving Linda LeMaster's report of an assault by Stuart Martin on a homeless person, was the officer pressured Linda LeMaster into turning off the tape recorder so that the recording of her actual statement to the police officer was not recorded. so there can be no later judgment as to how accurately the officer reported it. We have an incoming call here.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz on the air.
Oh, well, hi. I don't really know you. You stuck a note on my amplifier at the Underground Cafe.
I did?
Yeah, or you did, or somebody did.
Hmm.
And gave me this phone number and said to call in.
Who does the note sign by?
Let's see. It's not signed. It was kind of a not very tall guy, kind of a...
Yeah, that wasn't me. What you have here is you're calling a radio station. We're on the air with you. Happy New Year, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
And I'm in charge of a show involving poverty rights in Santa Cruz. I could take your number and leave a message for someone. I'll tell you what, maybe I should call you back, because we should probably do this off-air.
Okay.
Can you call back like in about 15 minutes?
Oh, sure.
I'd appreciate that.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And there we have it, Life in the Raw on New Year's Day. Becky, any comments about this segment you just heard of another example of how cooperative our local police department is at taking reports that concern poor people versus rich people?
I love the part where the officer said, well, I'd be happy to take your report, but it will be absolutely useless if I do.
Where the other officer intervened and said, you don't have to take a report. You're not going to take a report. That's wrong. And then the point where, I went to get the actual victim. Well, we don't want that, so.
And then I thought it was also curious when they asked you to turn the tape recorder off, too.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all part
of the same scene. They don't want to be responsible for dealing with real problems between poor people and rich people. And since we see police cannot be responsible, cannot be fair, aren't interested in involving themselves in that position and asserting people's rights there, or protecting people's rights.
And I love this pass the buckitis that we had so clearly demonstrated in this.
Since they're not willing to do this, we need a third force. We need some sort of mediators. We need people themselves to take on the rights of those who are poor, those who are being hassled. Mm-hmm. We need to stand up for each other on the streets.
And also I thought it was kind of curious that because they had not actually witnessed the assault themselves, that it didn't matter.
Yeah, that's preposterous. They arrested David Dumars, who I read on the Stuart Martin wanted poster, also known as BD, after Stuart Martin assaulted him. When Martin falsely asserted that he was assaulted, the other fellow was arrested. I suppose you could say that we didn't have the actual victim of the assault in hand. But the victim of the assault was one block away, and I was going to go get that person. Although, when I got down to that place next to the red fence, previously the Cooper House block, the young man with the sign was gone. Apparently, he'd had enough bullying for the day.
Perhaps he wasn't convinced he was going to get fair treatment the authorities and the courts.
Oh, ye of little faith.
I can't imagine why he would have come to that conclusion.
People are just paranoid about the police.
Paranoid. That must be it. That must be from too much alcohol and drugs. We hear they all have a problem with
listening
that.
To too many homeless activists, probably. You've got to understand that Sergeant Seeley does what's best for you. As does Officer Dennison and every other officer on the mall.
Well, speaking of our justice system, I have another issue that I want to discuss.
Good. What is that, Becky?
The state of Ray McMinn.
Ray McMinn of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, one of your
board member
cohorts on the board. One might add, the only homeless member on the board. At that same board meeting, Becky, did not Celia Scott try to get two homeless people, they agree to have two homeless people on the board, and what happened to that proposal?
Well, let's see. Paul Marcello didn't seem to be very excited about that. He raised a lot of objections that homeless people, they might get a home and then they wouldn't qualify as board member. And there were some other members on the board who said, well, if we don't have the homeless, an actual homeless person representative on the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, then we just need to recruit some more. Seemed reasonable to me. Since Citizens Committee for Homeless is ostensibly to have citizens in the community to provide support and services to homeless people, it would make sense to have homeless representatives who could give an idea what sort of services homeless people want and need. And there was no homeless representative at this last Thursday meeting. The one person who has been appointed as a homeless representative since Ray is no longer able to attend meetings, this person was a no-show. I don't know if that adds to people's biases against homeless people. He did call in, I heard tell. But anyway, I really want to talk about Ray McMinn. Ray is a formerly homeless man. Well, I guess he's homeless again. He was arrested this summer for a drunken disorderly. His mother had died in the spring, and although he has been fairly sober in recent years, he fell off the wagon and became drunken and became disorderly, and the police were called, and he landed himself in jail. This is small potatoes as far as Santa Cruz authorities go. He only needed to spend a few days in jail to serve his time for this incident. But while he was there, they discovered that there was an outstanding warrant from him for the state of Virginia. Now, you have to understand, you have to go back in time and understand the original nature of the original charge against Ray McMinn. He was convicted in 1970 of armed robbery. In fact, what happened was he got in an argument with a guy he knew and didn't care for much, and as an afterthought, as part of his anger against this man, did indeed rob this person with an unloaded gun of the quantity of $8. No one was injured in this incident. Ray was immediately arrested. There was a 15-minute trial, and it was a jury trial, and the jury deliberated for 5 minutes, and the verdict came back 40 years in state prison. Ray served 14 and a half years for this crime before he was put out on parole. He was on parole for 6 years after that. There was never any indication from the Virginia courts as to when his parole would end or what he needed to do to end that chapter in his life. In 1989, we had our earthquake here in Santa Cruz, and Ray became concerned because he had lost contact with his mother and his sister, but he believed that they were living in Santa Cruz. And when the reports of the earthquake hit in Virginia, many of the reports said that the epicenter of the quake was indeed in Santa Cruz, and he became extremely concerned, so much so that he uprooted himself from Virginia and came out to Santa Cruz in an attempt to find his mother and his sister. Well, it proved to be a very poor decision for Ray, in the sense that he did not have employment here, he did not have connections, he ran out of money, he had an alcohol problem, which became exacerbated, and he became one of the homeless people that we saw on our streets in 89 and 90, sleeping out of doors, and I don't know if he was panhandling or not, but he became involved with the Homeless Garden Project at that time, and not only was he greatly helped by the Homeless Garden Project, He got into counseling. He stopped drinking. He was able to get housing. He worked for the Homeless Garden Project in a paid position. He learned all about organic gardening and how to interface with other homeless people and to help find their needs. And he became very, very dedicated to the Homeless Garden Project, to the point where he was working about 20 hours a week paid, and he was donating another 20 hours a week of voluntary service, not court-ordered, to the Homeless Garden Project and working as an interface between homeless people and services such as Citizens Committee for the Homeless provide. When he was picked up for this parole violation this summer, the state of Virginia decided that, we can't have parole violators going out, and that approximately $3,000 or $4,000 of airline tickets and countless salaries later, he was extradited to Virginia, where he is this minute. His parole board, he's coming before the parole board very shortly. January 5th was the date that I heard. And we are petitioning the parole board in Virginia to release Ray onto parole. We are petitioning the parole board in Virginia to allow his parole to be transferred to the Santa Cruz County. And to do that, I'm asking that people who know Ray or know the situation to please write your comments or suggestions to the parole board.
Becky, can you give your number give those folks that address should they want to give it, and then they could call you, because we have our other programmers just arrived.
I just wanted to give the members of the parole board in Virginia and who to address their letters of support to Ray. The head of the parole board is Bruce Morris. He's the chairman of the Virginia Parole Board.